Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Red, White, and Rude, where I talk about the intersectionality of culture and politics. Today, we're roasting woke leftists who, despite the fact it was one of their own indoctrinated, mentally ill minion who should be enjoying life, but who their ideology of transgenderism destroyed him. Yes, I'm talking about the Minnesota shooting of where an individual who was tired of being transgender but stuck where he was with it, shot and killed innocent children at a Catholic school. Then we'll get into some updates concerning Jussie Smollett, Gloria Gaynor, and the Snoop Dogg Lightyear movie as one of the writers chimes in. I'll also touch on Neil Young. Who? I know, but in the 60s he was big, and now he's just an old hippie boomer trying to stay relevant. Then we'll talk about the woke at Vanity Fair losing it over Melania Trump. Megyn Kelly goes off on Blake Lively's subpoena of her records. And has Sony learned after the Concord game, DEI game, that is, that cost them $400 million, that was a big fail? Well, I'll fill you in. But before that, make sure you give the podcast a thumbs up as you watch and bookmark grumblingsmedia.com and check out our swag on there. We have some cool mugs, hats, and shirts. Support our all-volunteer cause. And I have a really cool shirt there for my brethren, my conservative Latinos. Don't forget to follow us on your favorite platform. We're on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, under the handle Grumblings Media. And with that out of the way, let's get rude. The Minneapolis shooting, the Hollywood left, mainstream media, and Democrats ignored the motive, buried the identity, and smeared the innocent to protect one of their own, a transgender mass murderer. Last week, August 27th, a transgender former student opened fire at Annunciation Catholic School in Minneapolis. He killed two children, I want to say 8 and 10, I believe, and injured 20 others. The shooter left behind messages targeting Christians and conservatives. But instead of confronting the ideology behind the violence, as always, the left's cultural mouthpieces, Rosie O'Donnell, Stephen King, and Mia Farrow, rushed to blame Republicans and conservatives and MAGA and guns. Their reactions weren't just dishonest. They were desperate attempts to protect their narrative and bury the truth. The shooter was named Robin Westman, changed name legally from Robert Westman, 23, a transgender former student of Annunciation Catholic School. The victims, I was right, an 8-year-old boy and a 10-year-old girl were killed, 17 others injured, including 14 children. The attack occurred during morning mass. And the shooter, as always, as what these cowards do, they died by suicide at the scene. Now, he had messages on his weapon, too, that state who and what he was, literally. Phrases like, kill Donald Trump, where is your God, and for the children. Don't sound like conservative messaging to me. Sounds like leftist, democratic, mainstream media messaging. The FBI is treating the incident as domestic terrorism and a hate crime targeting Catholics. And that's good. They need to. They really do. So let's talk about the shooter's profile. What are they hiding? Well, Westman was a former student, again, had a history of mental illness and gender identity struggles, and it appears the mother helped encourage that. Expressed regret over transitioning and anger toward religious institutions. Had a manifesto and weapon inscriptions, as I pointed out already, that show clear leftist ideological targeting of Christians and conservatives. This is the same type of hate we see coming from Hollywood elites. Jimmy Kimmel, Stephen Colbert, the mainstream media, CNN, MSNBC, Jen Psaki crying, you're going to blame transgenders, you can't. And obviously Democrats. This wasn't MAGA. This wasn't random. This was radicalized leftist violence by the Democrat Party, by the mainstream media, and by Hollywood. The pattern's undeniable, my friends. Radical gender ideology is driving violence and targeting innocent people. I got to be honest, enough excuses, enough denial. This threat is real and it's escalating. And it's time for a national intervention. Don't believe me? Listen to this. September 20th, 2018, Aberdeen shooter identified as trans. May 17th, 2019, the Denver STEM shooter identified as trans. November 19th, 2022, Colorado Springs shooter identified as non-binary. March 27th, 2023, the Nashville Christian school shooter identified as trans. January 4th, 2024, the Iowa high school shooter was a trans activist. It was a gender-fluid individual. This is all based off of their social media. February 11, 2024, Lakewood Church shooter identified as trans. Now, full transparency, Moreno, a female, used male aliases, but was consistently identified as female and had a documented history of schizophrenia. My point, the left is encouraging this, not trying to help this individual. Obviously, August 27th, 2025, the Minneapolis Catholic school shooter identified as trans. So let's talk about statistical deflection. The left's math trick. I'm a stats guy. I built a whole fantasy sports empire on stats. I was one of the best in the country at fantasy football. My website at one time was ranked in the top 2,000 of the world. Via Alexa. I couldn't afford that $20,000 to get some of the other data. But why do I bring this up? Well, I do look at the numbers. From 2018 to 2025, there have been approximately 2,900 mass shootings in the U.S. Of those, at least 7 involved perpetrators identified as transgender or non-binary, and I gave you those. So that's roughly 0.24%. 0.24%. Now you may go, well, wait, that's hardly a blip. I'm not going to debate that. What I will tell you though, it's more than doubled from the 0.1% that the left cites. Why? They go back as far as they can. They want to make that number as small as possible. 0.1%, man. That's like a haystack and needle. True. But 0.24%, it's more than doubled. It's a national epidemic. So while 5 trans shooters out of 5,700 is technically true, it is misleading. So prior to the last 5 years, trans non-binary shooters were extremely rare. It's a growing phenomenon. That's a 500% increase in just 4 years. Let me repeat that. A 500% increase in just 4 years. The left hides a trend by stretching the timeline and burying the surge in a decade-long data set. It's a common tactic used by those who are trying to hide or offset the real damage. This isn't about statistical rarity. It's about ideological escalation, and the left is working overtime to bury it. So how did the left respond? They didn't mourn. They didn't wait for facts. They launched a coordinated smear campaign to protect their narrative and deflect from the truth. Now, why is this shooting in the red, white, and rouge? Well, the red, white, and rouge, I talk about cultural and the intersectionality of politics. Well, enter Hollywood. Rosie O'Donnell's deranged accusation. She claimed the shooter was another MAGA lunatic and a white supremacist. Law enforcement confirmed Westman was a transgender and posted anti-Trump messages, including calls for Trump's death. No evidence supported Rosie's claims. Demonstrably false were her claims. Her statements were made from Ireland, where she's still in self-isolation. Or self-exile because of Trump's re-election. But she's still a liar, the same liar she was before she left. And then she followed up with rants about Christian nationalism, gun nuts, and radicalized MAGA youth. Let me make a quick point here. Immigrants will be the first to tell you that patriotism is at the heart of a strong nation. We must all be Americans first. Then we can be proud of whatever we are, whether you're gay, trans, Latino, black, white. Yeah, you can be proud of your white, Asian, whatever you are. Hey, you're not proud of because you're white. You're proud because you're Irish, Italian, you know, English, etc. It's your culture. And we should be proud that we are a Christian nation. We are arguably the most tolerable religion in the world, to my knowledge. We had our tough times, but we've overcome that. So when I hear bigots, and in my heart, deep down, Rosie's projecting her own racial beliefs. She views blacks and Latinos as beneath her, and thus she has to save us. It's what I call the white savior complex, and that's what she has. But she's completely wrong on Christian nationalism. Gun nuts, no, it's in our Constitution. And radicalized MAGA youth, yeah, after a couple of generations, going back to Obama, or at least this generation, America's failed them. So, of course, they're leaving the Democrat Party. And then when you tell them that they're all white supremacists, it's all their fault, this country like it is, of course they're going to become MAGA. But it's you, Rosie, who radicalized them and made them see the truth. For that, I thank you. Regardless, she claimed the shooter was a product of Trump's America. No, I just said it. The shooter is a product of Rosie O'Donnell. Has nothing to do with America and what the MAGA values are. The evidence is clearly to the contrary of what she says. Her feed has become a stream of conspiracy, projection, and rage. This is the same Rosie who once called Trump a rapist. Says she'd flee to Canada and accuse MAGA voters of being mentally ill. God, Rosie. Yet looking at her posts, her antics, her rants, it's clear who one would state is mentally ill versus MAGA. Her credibility is non-existent. Her relevance is rage. She's not the only one. Stephen King's deflection and delusion. King posted, trans is not the problem. He had a gun. That's the problem. Let's take his example. Everybody has done this. But it's a fun exercise in showing how stupid and bigoted Stephen King is. Once again, another man who lives in an all-gated white community who has a white savior complex because he views himself as above Latinos and blacks, and he must save them from our own stupidity. Yes, I am Latino. So vete a carajo, idiota que no creen que yo soy Latino. So let's apply this logic. Again, he posted, trans is not the problem. He had a gun. That's the problem. Does that mean cars are the problem in a hit-and-run accident, not the driver who fled the scene? Does that mean wives are the problem in domestic abuse, not the man who beats them? Does that mean alcohol is the problem in DUI deaths, not the drunk who chose to drive? Does that mean matches are the problem in arson, not the person who lit the fire? Does that mean money is a problem in bribery, not the corrupt politician who took it? Does that mean words are the problem in slander, not the person who spread the lie? Does that mean phones are the problem in cyberbullying, not the person sending the threat? You can also use social media platforms in that sense too. Does that mean airplanes are the problem in terrorism, not the hijacker who weaponized them? The sheer stupidity is beyond belief with King and his ilk. Anti-gun bigots is what they are. King ignored the shooter's identity, motive, and manifesto targeting Christians. Now, King has a long history of blaming guns while staying silent on ideological rock. I mean, he pulled his own book, Rage, for inspiring school shooters, then blamed everyone but himself. This deflection is part of a broader pattern. Erase the motive, protect identity, and redirect blame to the tool. Conservatives see through it. I see through it. You see through it. This wasn't random violence. It was targeted hate. Then there's a lesser known by today's generation and better known as Woody Allen's ex, Mia Farrow's hypocrisy and obvious political exploitation. She posted on Blue Sky, her platform of choice, quote, rational gun laws desperately needed. Many Republican lawmakers receive millions in bribes from gun makers and NRA, unquote. Now, she posted this before any facts were confirmed, and this is nothing but what you call ideological reflex. So let's talk about Pharaoh here. Who she is. Let's talk about her character. Her character! She shielded Woody Allen from abuse allegations involving her adopted daughter, Dylan. Dylan was 7 years old at the time, which would make Woody Allen a pedophile. She only went public about this after discovering Allen was having an affair with another adopted daughter, Soon Yi. Not a very honorable woman. In fact, what I call trash. Now, a couple of her adopted children have accused her of emotional abuse and manipulation. Moses Pharaoh, a licensed therapist now and adopted son, publicly accused Mia Farrow of emotional and physical abuse, describing her as controlling, manipulative, and prone to violent outbursts. Then there's Soon Yi Previn at the time, now Soon Yi Allen, Woody Allen's current wife, the one he was having an affair with while married to Mia Farrow. She called Pharaoh vengeful and abusive, claiming she was treated like a servant and physically struck with objects during childhood. Mia Farrow's outrage is performative, her credibility long gone. She is actually the perfect example of what I call the white savior complex. How she treated these two individuals, for what they say, is a clear complex of you are beneath me. But you are useless and worthless, so I will protect you and be your voice. I will save you. That's the white savior complex. And she exudes it. And let's talk about more hypocrisy. She accuses the NRA of donating to bribe politicians. Yeah, FEC records show Pharaoh has donated to Democrats aligned with her as well as their committees. By her own logic, she's bribing politicians too, just on the left. This is a double standard. When she donates, it's activism. When conservatives donate, it's corruption. The Minnesota shooting was a tragedy, but the left's reaction was and is a disgrace. Instead of confronting the ideology behind the violence, they blamed the right, smeared conservatives, and protected their own. The shooter was a radicalized leftist transgender, but the Democrats, the mainstream media, and Hollywood elites did everything to deflect and protect him. This is the pattern. Deflect, distort, distract. Hollywood, Rosie O'Donnell, Stephen King, and Mia Farrow did what they always do. Protect the narrative, no matter the cost. But we're not letting it slide, my friends. Why? Because we know the truth matters. The motive matters. And the narrative war is on. And we're not just winning. We're now dismantling their illusion. And when Hollywood's shield cracks, the truth doesn't just set you free. It exposes everything. All right. I'm going to rip through various other tales here. But before that, let me give you a show here. We've got... Come on. Oh, man. It always does this to me. Always like the classic pose. That's the Grumblings Media coffee mug. That's a big one. It's what I call the porn star of cups. I crack myself up. That's ex-sailor in me. But that said, it's a 15-ouncer. You can sit there and swipe the QR code there. It'll take you straight to our store. We are an all-volunteer project. I'd love for you to support us by ordering some of this swag. You can also check it out at grumblingsmedia.com. I'll leave it up there for a minute. So let's get to the rude rundown. That's what I call my lightning round. And I have an update. Netflix, the truth about Jussie Smollett. Another entry in the streaming giant's genre of truth distortion. So Netflix's latest documentary attempts to repackage the Smollett hoax as a nuanced exploitation of truth in a polarized society. What it actually delivers is a masterclass in narrative laundering, elevating ambiguity over accountability, and giving airtime to a convicted liar under the guise of cultural reflection. So Netflix, Smollett's frames Smollett's hoax as a Rorschach test. And that's dodging moral clarity with faux intellectualism. They want you to look at it as, man, these guys are smart. They know what they're talking about. And the morality of this. But they actually never quite give you details or come to an answer. So what's a Rorschach test real quick? It's a psychological tool used using ink blots to reveal how people project meaning onto ambiguity. You know, so this is ambiguous. What's it mean to you? They want you to leave that with this whole hoax is actually ambiguous. What they're trying to frame onto you, put onto you, is that they want you to leave, well, he's not guilty. So they're actually bastardizing the Rorschach test. In this case, it's used to mask the truth, turning a proven hoax into a subjective interpretation rather than looking at the facts. So the central question, did he lie, is left unresolved despite a criminal conviction and overwhelming evidence. In full transparency, his 2021 conviction was overturned in 2024. But here's the fact. It was overturned on procedural grounds, not innocence. They want you to believe it was overturned on innocence. The Supreme Court of Illinois found no factual error. It was a procedural, a technicality of how the case was processed. So the hoax remains legally and publicly confirmed. Yet Netflix hands him a microphone post-conviction. No pushback, no accountability. This is revisionism sold as reflection. Propaganda disguised as redemption. Why? Well, the production team behind the Tinder swindler, they've become known as shock over scrutiny. They prioritize aesthetic polish over actual investigative rigor. What's that mean? They don't care about the facts. They want to sensationalize it. Think National Enquirer. In a nutshell, Netflix just wanted clicks. The truth didn't matter. The drama to hook you in did. Critics are already calling it icky, irresponsible, and morally vacant. And they're being generous. Victimhood has become currency, and accountability is optional. What's that mean? You become the victim and you're swimming in cash. You're swimming in attention. Accountability, the actual facts, I don't know. We got time to talk about that. To revisit this, Smollett paid two Nigerian brothers who are as black can be, not white as white can be, that he claims, to stage a hate crime. They actually reenacted it. They're hilarious to watch and listen to. They claim bleach, nooses, and MAGA slogans were used in the attack. They blamed Trump supporters and fueled racial division. That's what Smollett was trying to do. And they used the two Nigerian brothers to further this. Surveillance footage, phone records, and confessions confirmed the complete setup. The jury didn't hesitate. The evidence was overwhelming. And we all know Smollett lied to police and played the victim on national television. Now he's treated by the cultural left as a misunderstood prophet. He has no credibility. It's non-existent. This is what you call a platform. That's a monument to ideological laundering. The real victim wasn't Smollett. It was the truth. The Jussie Smollett story isn't journalism by Netflix or the producers. It's reputation rehab wrapped in a postmodern fog. Conservatives see through the spin. I do, you do, we all do. Smollett lied, the media amplified it, and now Netflix wants to rewrite history. With a question mark. What's more troubling, this is a textbook example of how progressives, Democrats, and the cultural leftists use entertainment to seed political narratives / political lies. By cloaking deception in nuance and ambiguity, they lay the groundwork for future ideological framing. They're steering Americans toward a worldview where truth is subjective, victimhood is currency, and accountability, again, is optional. It's not just about Smollett, it's about normalizing narrative manipulation as a political tool. And they are great at it. This is comes out of the book, Alinsky Tactics. I recommend every conservative read it. I've studied it. Moving on, Megyn Kelly versus Blake Lively. Hollywood elitism meet free speech wealth warfare. This is a subpoena saga that exposes the machinery behind celebrity reputational control. Megyn Kelly, however, didn't just push back. She torched Blake Lively's legal maneuvering as a textbook case of Hollywood elitism trying to muzzle dissent. So, on her August 28th, 2025 show, a SiriusXM broadcast, Kelly revealed that Blake Lively's legal team subpoenaed her show for internal communications. Lively's team was implying that Kelly's criticism was part of a paid smear campaign. Now, Lively's camp denies targeting Kelly directly, but the subpoena trail says otherwise. In December 2024, and we're already in August, Lively sued Justin Baldoni for sexual harassment, retaliation, and orchestrating the smear campaign. This is the broader lawsuit, the Lively versus Justin Baldoni lawsuit. That began in December 2024. Baldoni countersued Lively, Ryan Reynolds, and her publicist for defamation and extortion, and the suit was dismissed in June, a few months ago. But the judge jumped through hoops to get the full dismissal. Again, the violence of activist judges, judges who want to be part of the news instead of doing their jobs. Now, Lively's team has subpoenaed media figures that have been critical of her, including Candace Owens and Perez Hilton. My belief, Lively wants licensing control of the second book to block Baldoni from directing the sequel. And that this whole thing came about because, oh my God, what was that book? Hold on one second. Book Baldoni turned into a movie. Gosh. Well, regardless, I believe she wants the It Ends With Us by Colleen Hoover. My belief is that Lively wants the licensing control of the second book to block Baldoni from directing the sequel. Why? Baldoni holds those rights. This was his project from the start, and Lively usurped it. Now she wants the future rights, and this lawsuit is her leverage. Am I being speculative? Yes. But it's a logical deduction based on control, and control is Lively's signature move. The movie was a blockbuster. He made, I want to say, $300 million. Now, off the budget, it probably made $100 million profit right around there, so that's big money. So, Lively alleged that Kelly's coverage, again, was orchestrated by Baldoni's legal team because Baldoni's lawyer was once Megyn Kelly's lawyer, and I'm sure will be again. It wasn't in this case when she fought the lawsuit. The subpoena demanded, quote, confidential and proprietary materials, unquote. They wanted that from the Megyn Kelly show. Lively implied Kelly was paid to criticize her. Kelly fired back, calling Lively, quote, narcissistic, liar, bully, brat, unquote. And, quote, nasty, elitist, Hollywood snob, unquote. Now, Kelly says she fought the subpoena and won, handing over nothing. Now, Lively's team says they did not subpoena Kelly personally. The subpoena was served to Red Sea Ventures, which distributes Kelly's show. Now, her lawyers argue this is standard discovery procedure in litigation. While subpoenas of third-party media companies are common in high-profile lawsuits, Megyn Kelly's show was clearly targeted because of its coverage. Any moron can see that. The subpoena sought internal communication specifically related to Lively making Kelly's platform, not just her distributor, the intended focus. In other words, they were after Kelly and her show because she was the one talking about it, not the distributor. So this isn't just a celebrity spat. What it is, it's a warning shot to independent media, to us, to you, to anybody who's podcasting. Lively's legal strategy mirrors a broader leftist pattern. Use litigation to intimidate dissent, especially for those who can't afford to fight. They end up shutting down or shutting up. And that's the actual goal for Lively and her team. Subpoenaing journalists and podcasters over negative coverage is a direct threat to press freedom. And I'm assuming that's what they recognized when Megyn Kelly won. But Hollywood elites, backed by deep pockets and PR machines, they're increasingly using the courts to control narrative and punish critics. Megyn Kelly's refusal to ban is more than personal. It's symbolic for us. Her takedown of Blake Lively exposes entitlement of Hollywood elites who believe criticism must be paid for orchestrated or silent. Lively's attempt to subpoena Kelly's internal communications, whether direct or via proxy, doesn't matter. It's part of a disturbing trend, my friends. A trend where progressives and cultural elites weaponize legal tools. Why? To suppress speech and reframe criticism as a conspiracy. This is how the left uses culture to frame politics. Not always through overt messaging, but through reputation control, selective outrage, and narrative engineering. Today it's subpoenas, tomorrow it's platform bans, advertiser pressure, and algorithmic suppression. I see this pattern, conservatives see the pattern, and we cannot and must not back down. So thank you to Megyn Kelly for fighting the fight for us. Neil Young's big crime. A washed up protest against a crime crackdown that's actually working. So while D.C.'s crime drops and the mayor praises Trump, a Democrat mayor, Neil Young rants from the sidelines in a tired attempt to stay relevant. Young released a protest song titled Big Crime, attacking Donald Trump's federal law enforcement, or rather the law enforcement surge in Washington, D.C. And this was just days after D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser publicly credited the crackdown with reducing violent crime. You can't make this up. Young's lyrics accused Trump of fascism and militarism, but the timing couldn't be more ironic. The city's own Democrat mayor is praising the results while Young continues his long-running pattern of political tantrums. Ooh! From the safety of a concert stage and gated fortress he calls home. Some of the lyrics, don't need no fascist rules, don't want no fascist schools, don't want soldiers walking on our streets. Well, yeah, the rhyme going there pretty well. There's a big crime in D.C. at the White House. How can it be a crime if a duly elected over 80 million people voted for him? Too much acid, Young's done. No more money to the fascists, the billionaire fascists. George Soros, anyone? He was targeting Trump's deployment of National Guard troops and federal agents to D.C., which he has every legal right to do in D.C. Now, this was released during Young's Chicago tour stop. Who? What? Where? When? Exactly. But he didn't even perform this during the main set. Young has previously sued Trump's campaign for using his music at rallies. He endorsed Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, the millionaires, I'm millionaires. Now it's just the billionaires because he's a millionaire. Yeah, man of the people, Bernie and Neil Young, two millionaires. And he attacked Elon Musk and claimed Trump would jail him for speaking out. We're still waiting on the cops to be sent to Young's fortress or old folks' home. So he has a history also rewriting lyrics to fit whatever progressive cause is trending. And he orgasmically, with the little blue pill, fantasizes about Trump's downfall. But what's he do in the meantime? He's completely ignoring the actual crime victims, the ones who are happy that Trump did this. Let me give you a reminder of who Neil Young is. He's the guy with the Spotify boycott, the failed stunt. So in 2022, Young demanded Spotify remove his music over Joe Rogan's COVID commentary. What he didn't tell fans and why he was didn't tell them, because he knew it was a hollow request. It was just pumping them up. He was lying. Why? He didn't own the rights to most, if not all, of his catalog. What eventually happened? The songs that they did pull down, the label quietly re-uploaded in 2024. Why? The boycott fizzled. No mass artist exodus, no culture shift, and no measurable impact. And his label was like, man, we're losing money by pulling him down. There's a few hippies out there who listen to him. Spotify remains dominant while Young streaming numbers remain negligible. So right now he's on a tour. Huh? What? Where? Exactly. There's no sellout headlines, no viral moments, just a bunch of old farts and legacy bookings. Now, critics have said that the performance lack energy and excitement. It's just a basic deliverable with notable lulls. In other words, it's a boring concert. And in fact, the Big Crime song, most fans didn't hear it live. It was done during rehearsal, during setup. So much for making the big hit, the big impact. And D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, again, she praised Trump's federal surge. Quote, "We greatly appreciate the surge of officers that enhance what MPD has been able to do in this city," unquote. That's the Metropolitan Police Department. Carjacking's down 87%. Violent crime down 44%. And Bowser at first wasn't for this, but now she is. And for that, her own Democrat Party attacks her. Why? For keeping D.C. safe. I want y'all to understand that. D.C. is safer today than it was yesterday. Oh, authoritarianism. Well, you know what? Nobody wants the National Guard there. Trump didn't want it there, but crime was so bad, he had no choice. And you know what? This is just an example of anarchy, of libertarian-style anarchy. When it happens, you lose control, and you have to call the big guns. When you ask and demand freedom, and then crime is upheld, and there's no law and order, this is what ends up happening in a civilized society. Nobody wants it to happen, but your own policies that you say you're for the people, you're not really for the people, you're for crime. Young Song attacks the very policy that's saving lives in D.C. The mayor's praise undercuts the left's narrative that Trump's surge was authoritarianism. The real big crime is the left's refusal to admit when conservative policies work. Young's lyrics are nothing but ideological theater detached from facts, outcomes, and reality. In essence, Neil Young's Big Crime is a protest anthem without a cause. So while D.C. crime drops and even its Democratic mayor praises Trump's federal surge, Young rants from the sidelines, clinging to a failed Spotify boycott, playing to half-filled venues, and recycled slogans that haven't landed since, wait for it, the Nixon era. But this is the last playbook. Ignore results, amplify outrage, and weaponize art. / culture to smear opponents. That's why I do the podcast, Red, White, and Rude, where culture and politics collide. But again, we conservatives see through it. The facts are in. The crime is down. And the noise from Neil Young is just that. Noise. All right, kids. Let me show you my favorite shirt here. Latinos for Trump! ¿Quién es el más macho? El señor presidente Trump es el más macho. So my brethren Latinos, hey, give me a shout out by supporting us with a purchase of this shirt as the funds go to support our all-volunteer cause. Nobody gets a dime here. You can swipe the code there. It'll take you straight to the store or head on over to grumblingsmedia.com. I have an update. Disney's Lightyear. It reignites controversies. Snoop Dogg questions the lesbian couple and the writer doubles down. So this update is another example of progressive ideology overriding common sense and tanking box office returns. So last week I talked about Snoop Dogg's comments that sparked backlash after questioning the appropriateness of a lesbian couple in Lightyear, a film he watched with his grandson. His confusion triggered a wave of online outrage. And the screenwriter, Lauren Gunderson, doubled down, claiming credit for the scene. So obviously that exchange has reignited the debate that began in 2022. Now, to reiterate, the scene featuring Buzz Lightyear's commanding officer kissing another woman. It was a woman kissing another woman. And that was originally cut by Disney, then reinstated because Pixar employees were like, "Don't do that! You can't censor! You can't censor my gay love!" And actor Chris Evans, who without Captain America's a nobody, called everybody idiots. In fact, he hasn't done anything much of note since then. And the film was banned in countries because of the kiss. And again, Snoop Dogg watched it with his grandson who asked how two women had a baby. And he said he was caught off guard. He questioned whether such content belonged in children's films. It doesn't. And he faced immediate backlash because of asking a question. And what happened? Snoop Dogg, he yielded to the mob. Not quite the take the hood would respect. He apologized on Instagram. Teach me how to learn. I'm not perfect. Shut up, Snoop, and just freaking take another hit. Disgusting. Disgusting. Now, Gunderson took credit for the lesbian couple. I created the Light Year Lesbians. She says she made the change by simply writing he or she instead of he and claimed it was about representation. She attacks Snoop Dogg directly. He sucks. Now, she says her role was minimal, but she's publicly proud of that. Here are the results. Production cost, $200 million. Marketing cost, $100 to $150 million. So you're looking at a total estimated cost of $300 to $350 million. The worldwide box office gross, $218 million. It needed at least $750 to $875 million to break even. Gunderson's ideological insertion helped sink a multi-billion dollar franchise. Now, her decision wasn't about storytelling. It was about signaling and political indoctrination or ideological indoctrination. Her just write she instead of he, that just shows how casually ideology is injected into children's account without caring about the ramifications and no respect for parental boundaries. Snoop's confusion reflects what millions of parents feel. They're being ambushed, not informed, and the backlash against him proves the left's intolerance for simple, honest questions. And his apology? That's capitulation, bending the knee to the minions, letting the minority dictate terms to the common sense majority. Disney's attempt to force feed progressive messaging? Well, it cost them hundreds of millions and alienated families worldwide. Lightyear wasn't just a box office failure. It was a cultural warning. Disney and Democrats did not heed that warning. Lauren Gunderson's ideological stunt helped derail, again, a multi-billion dollar franchise. Sure, years later, when Snoop Dogg voiced a common parental concern, he was vilified. Doesn't matter what year that happens, you will always be vilified. But worse, he bent the knee and apologized, giving the bigots another win in the indoctrination war and taking away a parental right to raise their children how they see fit. This is how the left operates. Inject politics into children's media, punish dissent, and pretend it's all about love when in reality it's about indoctrination. Families want stories, not lectures, my friends. We want it. You want it. Everybody wants that. Stories, not lectures. And when ideology trumps storytelling, audiences walk away. Just ask Disney's accountants. We see through it all, but when will Snoop Dogg? Update, Sony's Concorde. So let me remind y'all, Sony's live shooter Concorde didn't just flop, it imploded. They spent $400 million on development and marketing, and the game was pulled after 14 days after launch. It was pulled offline 14 days after launch. Refunds were issued across platforms. The studio was shut down. And PlayStation executives were forced to admit what gamers already knew. It was a horrifically DEI-driven, terrible game. Sony learned their oversight was weak, gameplay was generic, and the product was built around identity politics instead of player experience. Now, why the update? Well, Sony is now rebuilding its strategy around, quote, failing early and cheap, unquote. Why is that philosophy now? Well, it's born from one of the most expensive failures in gaming history. 8 years to make this game. Again, $200 to $400 million in development costs. Sales, 25,000 copies across all platforms, approximately $1 million in revenue. That's a 99.75% loss ratio. At its peak on Steam, meaning how many players were playing online at one time? 697. Launch August 23rd, 2024, shut down September 6th, 2024, 14 days later. Firewalk Studios completely and permanently shut down, 170 developers laid off. Why? It was DEI driven. Characters feature preferred pronouns. One character listed as undecided on gender. Another was a towering, obese African-American woman. People like variety. They don't care if it's black or white. Many protagonists have been black, white, but they want their heroes to be in shape, to look good, to look great. It's what we fantasize about who, what, and what we want to be. Instead, they went the exact opposite. They emphasized diverse perspective and cinematic vignettes over actual gameplay. We all saw, for what it was, ideological first, player second. Pushback was immediate and widespread. Asking, who is this game for? Now, what did they do at the studio and Sony? Oh, that's just white noise. So, since then, Herman Hulst announced a new philosophy, quote, fail early and cheap, unquote. Again, the goal is to catch failures in early development to avoid massive financial losses. Increased oversight, more frequent group testing, better cross-term communication, closer executive involvement. Concord was marked as a flagship multiplayer experience built by ex-Bungie devs, backed by Sony, and hyped as a hero shooter. It was expected to be huge. Well, we got a $40 million title with no identity, no innovation, and no staying power. And what does this show shows a disconnect between corporate vision and player demand. Sony was obsessed with DEI. So this failed early pivot is critical to their survival and a tested admission that the old model is broken. First and foremost, parents, you need to know what games your young'uns are playing. Gaming outside of education is the number one way to indoctrinate your kid. Why? Everyone is gaming, from young children to adults. It's now part of our culture. For the industry, Concord's collapse is a cautionary tale for the entire industry. Sony burned up to $400 million. Why? They were chasing the manufacture trend. They ignored early warning signs and delivered a product that barely lasted 2 weeks. This is what happens when corporate hype overrides creative discipline. Now, conservatives in gaming have always been the first to fight and push back with incredible success. Concord's proof of that. We see the pattern, bloated budgets, ideological distractions, and zero accountability. Well, it looks like that's coming to an end. Well, we want quality, not virtue signaling, not pronoun menus, and definitely not another live service ghost town. All right. I'm out of time here, my friends. Well, I can probably squeeze a couple in. Gloria Gaynor. The left loved her anthem. The gays loved her anthem. America loved her anthem. America stuck with her, but the Democrats and gays broke ranks. Gloria Gaynor, the voice behind I Will Survive, is now surviving the Less Fury. After a very bigoted group, the Midas Touch, known from many conservatives as a group that lies, creates false narratives, and attacks all for clicks, not ideology, they went after Gaynor. They exposed nearly 22,000 in donations to Republican candidates and causes. She was branded a traitor by the very crowd that once hailed her as an icon. The backlash didn't interrupt because she changed. It interrupted because she refused to stay on the ideological plantation. For minorities, black, myself as a Latino, my brethren, my cousins, my grandmother, my brethren, darker Latinos, and Asian, the moment you step off script, the slurs come flying. Gaynor's story is just the latest example. In February 2025, Trump overhauled the Kennedy Center Board and named himself chairman. Critics say he politicized the institution. He has done no such thing. He's actually cleaned it up from being a far leftist organization. He's honored George Strait, Kiss, Sylvester Stallone, Michael Crawford, and Gaynor. What the left sees trolling, the right sees as overdue recognition. Now, her donations, she donated $2,000 to Speaker Mike Johnson, $1,200 to Senator Josh Hawley, $500 to Senator Ted Cruz, Kevin McCarthy, Marco Rubio, the NRSC, and New Journey PAC were also donated to. She gave early support to a black conservative in Ben Carson 2016. No direct donations to Trump, but her support is consistent with Republican-aligned platforms. Now, in 2017, Gaynor said, I'm really not a political person. That's her public stance because she knew what would happen if she spoke freely. The left didn't discover her politics. They purposely outed her to shame her. Her donation history shows quiet, consistent support for conservative values over nearly a decade. It's who she is. Yet, she loves the gay community and America. But they no longer love her, the gay community. LGBTQ activists and progressive media turned on her instantly. I Will Survive was once their anthem. Now they want it banned from gay spaces. And in Navarro, she, a Nicaraguan who professes Sandinista socialism hidden as democracy and equality, she demanded Gaynor reject the Kennedy Center honor. Social media lit up with slurs, insults, and calls for cancellation. She had to delete her Twitter account. Her Instagram account comments were locked down. And God bless her. She's accepting the honor. No apology, no retreat. Her statement, quote, "My hope is that in accepting this honor, I can continue with the inspiration of phenomena that began with I Will Survive," unquote. That's not defiance. That's dignity. She's choosing unity through music, not ideological submission. Gaynor's story is bigger than music. It's about control. Minorities who step off the less ideological plantation are punished. Latinos, I've been called Latrino. Blacks get hit with the uncle slur. Asians are told they're the other white meat. The message is clear. You're allowed to be celebrated, but only if you comply. Gaynor didn't comply. She didn't grovel. She didn't explain. She stood her ground. Gloria Gaynor being attacked for supporting Republicans amid her acceptance to attend as the Kennedy Center honoree didn't betray her values to anyone. She exposed the left's conditional tolerance. Her Republican donations didn't erase her legacy. History will prove they enhanced it. They revealed her convictions. And when the mob came for her, she didn't flinch. She's not just surviving. She's thriving in truth. This is what happens when a minority breaks ranks. The left doesn't debate. They punish. But as conservatives, we see through it. We know the game, and we're done playing it. God bless you, Gloria. And your song has and will continue to transcend time as one of the few that breaks all barriers. And come on. Who didn't love I Will Survive? And with that, my friends, look for the Vanity Fair story as a short early this week or in the midweek as I've run out of time. That was one of my favorite stories, too. That's why I saved it for last. But this is my show, and I hope you liked it. If you did, please make sure you hit like or thumbs up and share this podcast. Then bookmark grumbliesmedia.com and follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, and Spotify. At Grumbly's Media, under the profile handle Grumbly's Media. Finally, don't forget to check out our new swag as we have shirts, cups, and hats at grumbliesmedia.com. Until next week, this is William Del Pilar for the Red, White, and Rude. Stay safe and let me know your thoughts in the comments.